Off the ball on News Talk. Thanks to Air. Catch all the sports you love free on the Air Sport Pack with Air Broadband.
Yeah, you're very welcome back to this Off the Ball Roadshow special. We're playing you some highlights from last night's show that we recorded at the Stella Theatre with thanks to HeinekenRugbyClub.com. Naturally, Warren Gatland dropping Brian O'Driscoll for the third test against Australia in 2013 came up, and here it is.
You two seem to get on quite well now. Everything is grand.
Yeah.
Apart from that bit of...
4 years will do that to you, you know. We actually spent a bit of time in the lead up to the tour. Gats was worked hard on the circuit for about 6 weeks in advance. So I suppose, yes, of course, there was massive disappointment for a few months afterwards. And then when these things sink in, you realize when you finish your career, you realize that it's not worth having an argument over. People make decisions. You don't get to call, you know, your last games in any jersey. Coach gets to do that, so it's just the reality of sport. And once you get over your own initial disappointment, I think
it doesn't mean that I didn't reflect back afterwards, or we didn't reflect back and say, you know, was it the right decision? Did we make the right call? And selection is just all it is just a matter of opinion. It's just an opinion of people, and we made a call. But I don't know if Brian knows this, but the utmost respect for him and the way that he conducted himself afterwards. I just thought he was absolutely magnificent. And Rhys Long told me the story. You were in the lift with Rhys Long, who was our analyst. And whether Brian remembers this, he said, I've talked the talk, now I've got to walk the walk. And what he meant by that was, as the Irish captain, he would have been in this situation on many, many times where he would have said to the players that missed out and the rest of the squad, how disappointed they must be to not being in the starting 15 or the 23. But their job over the next few days is to put that disappointment behind them and to get behind the team and support the team and to allow them to do their very best to prepare for the match on Saturday, to get a performance and get a result and then to work hard. And fairness, you did that brilliantly, and I respect you so much for the way that you did conduct yourself during that period, obviously after what was a massive disappointment. And you know, you did walk the walk, so to speak. There you go.
So, not to labour the point, but why did you drop him?
Do you know I brought my gum shield to the game? Did I tell you that?
Yes, I did. Yeah, I heard that. Yeah. Just in case.
In case Jamie Roberts. I was shouting at his hamstring to ping in the warm-up. But no such joy.
Oh, look, yeah. I've got my gum shield.
I think Brian had come back from injury not long before the tour and then and come back, so he was happy to be on it and he'd done well. I mean, I thought probably the New South Wales game was probably the best that we played in that midfield combination. You said afterwards did play pretty well. Jonathan Davies had played.
And I was meant to start that game, and then I was just at a bit of a tight hamstring or something. Yeah. And
regret that one forever.
Come on, Ryan, tough it out a bit, will you?
Yeah, it was kind of... Yeah, look, I made a mistake.
Was the conversation... Do you remember that?
For me, in advance of the tour, I thought if I was going to play the test, I needed to partner with Manu, because I thought that Jamie and John Davis, if they, you know, they played well in the Six Nations, we'd beaten them in the first game, but then they'd gone and won the Six Nations, and I thought, you know, there's a good chance they're going to pick combinations, so I thought I need to partner well with Manu. Played in Perth in one of the first games, and we played really well together, and then Manu got injured. Selfish. And then Jamie got injured, so it was two 13s that were forced to play.
Yeah.
We weren't a good partnership, myself and Foxy. He's an out and out 13, very different than me, but definitely an out and out 13. We had to mix and match at 12 and 13, and I could understand making a change for the final test.
Did you know it was coming at any point?
No. So this was the only misgiving. Well. obviously, no, not the only misgiving. The real misgiving was the one not selecting me, but the previous misgiving, the one that frustrated me a bit, was that I was sent out to do media early on in the week. And usually it's someone that's going to be playing, and so you're talking about it. And I was asked about selection in it, and I thought, listen, it's, of course, it's possible for everybody to get dropped. And I remember having been sent out, I thought...
It's a good sign.
Yeah, great. Hopefully I'll be playing. And I did think that if I was playing, there's a good chance I'd be captain because Sam was going to be out. But then, yeah, I got the tap on the shoulder on the Wednesday. Having trained, I didn't go out on the beer with the boys on the Sunday night. They all went and had a big one. I went and had an ice cream because I knew that I wouldn't be able to recover properly at 33 or 34 years of age, having a big session on a Sunday and then playing on a Saturday. It just wouldn't happen. So I had an ice cream and said, walking by the bar, they were all, you know, wooing me in with, you know, full pints. I was like, no, I'm all right. Went and trained on the Tuesday, lifted, and then on Wednesday, sorry, I'm not making this easy for you.
No, you're not.
And then Wednesday, I got a tap at the coffee machine 10 minutes before the meeting, and I saw Gats and Rob Howley. I thought, this isn't good. You don't need two people for good news. And asked to go into the team meeting room and delivered it pretty quickly. And I think you black out a bit when you hear the bad news, and I'd never been dropped before, so... You know, the reality is that's...
Oh, thank you very much. I feel really good now. So.
And it was your last cap for the Lions on your third test.
Oh, yeah. Wow. What a bastard I am.
So, the thing is, I knew, like, I didn't actually know that Manu was on the bench, but I'm not a good bench player anyway. You know, Manu can play on the wing. So that was, it wasn't a jolt when I heard his name, but I thought, oh, that's extra painful. That, you know, someone else has been brought in to sit on the bench. So
that and in saying that, you know, we the media team didn't ask who should be put up for media.
They'd have been playing me, so
yeah, they had you in the team. Yeah, so it's kind of something that they spoke about afterwards. You know, in terms of maybe if there's, and probably we hadn't even at that stage hadn't even thought about it. They just put you up for media, but. You know, we possibly could have said, you know, were we thinking about a change? And like the hardest thing is, you know, obviously from an Irish, each country took the disappointment differently depending on where you came from. I was excommunicated from Ireland, so had to come back and beg for forgiveness on the Late Late Show one night. So, you know, and as Brian said, I mean, probably as coach, if you're going to make a decision like that, and it's a massive call, and you're leaving, you know, one of the best players in the world, and he's definitely been one of the best players in the world, and obviously a legend in Irish rugby, and a great Lion as well. If you're gonna, like, the easiest one, the softest thing was, okay, you dropped Brian O'Driscoll, and you could have put Brian on the bench, and that kind of would have been appeased everyone. But when you're making calls, and you've made a tough call, and as Brian just said, looked at it and went, actually, is Manu a better bench player? And yes, he would have been, you know, potentially with 15 minutes to go and been able to cover a couple of different decisions. So obviously, not only have we, you know, you kind of, if you're going to do it, you've got to commit to it and do the whole hog. And that's kind of where we went. And
do you explain all that in the conversation, or do you just say, no?
It wasn't very long.
No.
It was,
I just wanted to get out of there. Yeah, once you get bad news, you don't want to hear the reason for it. And I think I got, you know, we want to use John Davis's left foot a bit. I think that was one bit that I got from it, but the rest was inconsequential to me.
When you're delivering that, and particularly to, you don't want to be given a lot of excuses and something. You know, sometimes the decision's made, and then you can, you know, let the disappointment sink in, and then maybe you can have a conversation about it later and do that. So, you know, that's kind of the way that you want to. And not everyone we would go through that process. So not everyone. I mean, Brian deserved to be told because, you know, he didn't want to hear that the announcement in front of everyone without, you know, having some at least preparation for it. Because but other times with certain players and less experienced players, you wouldn't go through the. You wouldn't be saying, look, we haven't selected you this week, and these are the reasons why. Because they need to go through that process. But there are certain players that definitely need and have earned the respect to be told beforehand, so they can have some sort of preparation for it.
This all sounds unbelievably stressful. Like, do you enjoy this stuff?
It's the hardest thing.
But the whole thing sounds like, that tour, like, that kind of, certainly from an Irish perspective, it completely overshadows the last test. You guys have just won a test series, and it's like, it's really enjoyable. I've just been excommunicated from a country that my family lived in for a long period of time.
Yeah, I mean, the first question in the press conference was, oh, Warren, you must feel vindicated for leaving Brian Driscoll out. And I went, whoa. If I'd gone, yes, that's the headline, isn't it?
Yeah.
The next day, Gatlin says he's vindicated for dropping Brian Driscoll. I said, no, not at all. I said, it's the hardest thing I've ever had to do as a coach. It was painful, and we're kind of going through the process and the respect I have for him as a player and what he's achieved in the game. It was it was the toughest thing, but you sometimes you get charged with that and making those decisions. And I just said, you don't always make the right decisions, but you've got to be able to say, okay, I think it was the right decision at the time, and it, like I said, doesn't mean you don't reflect back on it and question yourself as well.
Where does the joy come from? Like, as a kid growing up, you watched the All Blacks and you got really into the game, and then you play the game at a really high level. Where does the joy come from now? Like, what's the inner peace?
Oh, the joy is on the training pitch. The joy is the match day stuff. Everything in between is a pain in the ass. I mean, I hate the press stuff and doing that, but I love being in the team room with the players and on the training pitch and the game stuff. And I mean, that's why you played the game. And it is
when though, because your kids talk about there being a good dad and a bad dad, and if the team
happy
lost,
daddy in bed,
happy daddy and dad. Yeah. Sorry, good. Obviously, he's always good. Yeah. Happier, yeah. So, like, is it a brief moment after a match? You're like, okay, this is grand, and we have to do it again next week.
Yeah, but the thing is with it's different between club rugby and with club rugby, you can fail, because you've got such a long season that you can go through, a couple of poor performances, or you're trying things and work it. International's not like that. International, there's no in between. It's agony or ecstasy. That's it. So it's the ecstasy of winning and then having the next week or the next few weeks to enjoy that, or it's the agony of going through the pain of, because there's so much scrutiny in international rugby, everything is looked at, and when you lose a game, it's kind of, there's no in between, and that's a complete difference between international and club rugby.
Yeah, it doesn't sound very enjoyable to the rest of the world. It's like it's an unbelievably hard.
When someone's paying you a lot of money, you lose.
Hey. So.
All right, so that's Brian and Warren stoking the embers of 2013 there. Up next, though, Warren fairly ruthlessly trolls Sean O'Brien.
Off the ball on News Talk. Thanks to Air. Catch all the sports you love free on the Air Sport Pack with Air Broadband.
Yeah, okay, so you're very welcome back. Brian O'Driscoll wasn't the only Irish player who had a run-in with Warren Gatland. You might remember Sean O'Brien had some choice words to say about the coaching setup for the Lions. Naturally enough, we were only too happy to dredge that up as well.
Okay, so we've got to talk about the green chair. We've got Sean O'Brien in it. I'm joking, we don't. Face didn't move.
No.
That was good.
That's the Botox.
I'm glad he's in it. Normally he's out at this time.
He'll tell you milking cows.
For those of you who haven't read the book yet, I recommend you do. You say unbelievably nice things about Sean O'Brien, like he's captaincy material, he's really vocal. When you're asked on the bus after the final test, it's like, oh, the players are voting for their player of the tournament. Who do you think it's going to be? Sean O'Brien is the person you think it's going to be.
I thought he was amazing. I thought he had a brilliant tour. I thought he was fantastic. There's no doubt about that. Look, he's come out and I've never had a problem with people being critical. And as a coach, I love to be challenged. I want to be questioned. I want to be people disagreeing with me, asking questions. I just thought it was a better forum than what he decided to do. He never said one word to me on tour, about things that he would do or would have done slightly differently. But there's no doubt he played fantastically well. He was, and I would never criticise him for the way that he played, and I thought it was some of the best rugby that we've seen from him.
Was your greatest annoyance with it that he pinpointed Rob Howley, that he singled him out rather than picking the coaching ticket at large, that he went after one player and that you had felt a responsibility for Howley?
Yeah, I think so. I think you've got to, you know, like I said, I don't think that was fair. And he kind of said that Owen and Johnny Sexton had taken, you know, some of the leadership role and from the attack perspective. And for me, that's good coaching. You know, it's kind of like, you know, as a coach, when you've got senior players, you want them to have an input. You want them to be able to be confident to take things, because other guys out there playing. And I can remember a really good story when I was coaching Wasps, and we had a captain's run on the Friday before a premiership final, and we had all our sponsors there, and one of the girls, Olivia, she was in the office, and I think we trained for about 20-25 minutes, and everything went like clockwork. It was the end of the season. I don't think I said one word, and the Lawrence Delalio was taking training. I think Rob Howley was there, and it was a fantastic training session. And afterwards, Olivia, the girl there, she came over to me and she said, "Excuse me, Warren." And I said, "Yes, Olivia." She said, "Do you mind if I ask you something?" And she said, "What do you do?" And she didn't understand my reply. And I said, "Olivia, do you know that's the biggest compliment anyone has ever given me about my coaching? Because it had all been done. And so it was player-led, and that's kind of... As a coach, you come in somewhere and you know, when you're first involved with a team, you drive things really, really hard how you want, and then eventually you hopefully pull back and get a balance between coaching input and hopefully players input and senior players input. And so, you know, go away on a Lions tour, if you don't use the experience and the ability of Johnny Sexton and an Owen Farrell, then you're not doing your job properly. Mm-hmm. You need to be using their knowledge and experience, and you know, someone like yourself and past tours as well, you know, are vital, because as coaches, we don't know everything. We need the input of players.
So you missed one another's calls, yourself and Sean. It was decided that you were going to speak to one another. How did that conversation go then? Was it slapped into reverse from Sean? were you both as honest as you might have been?
Look, I just said to him, he rang me and said he was disappointed how things were reported, that people only just picked up on the negatives. There were lots of positives about the tour. And I just, there were a couple of points I made to him. I said, "Sean, you know, you came in, you didn't train for the first 2 weeks, and then, you know, you've made a couple of statements to say that, you know, you were in the best shape of your life by the end of the tour." And I went, "Well, we must have done something right for you to get you in the best shape of your life." And then I said, "You know, you look at the training sessions." I said, "For us, a long training session's 45, 50 minutes. That, and people go, that's as long as we basically train for." And he said, "Yeah, I really enjoyed the training sessions. I thought they were short and sharp, and maybe get really well prepared for the matches." So I kind of went, "Well, what are some of the issues?" And so, look, we'd all do things differently. What you've got to understand as well is that, you know, part of my role is that I've got a group of players and I'm trying to manage them. And I'm disappointed with myself in that first test, because we were a bit heavy-legged. And not because I don't think because of the training, because we'd been in 10 hotels within 2 weeks. We hadn't had a day off, you know, the travelling and stuff. And I think there was an accumulation of arriving in New Zealand on the Wednesday, playing the first game on the Saturday, a week or so of recovering from jet lag. And yes, we were a little bit heavy-legged. So, and I was pissed off with myself, reflecting and having a look back on our preparation for that first test. So, and I'd spoken to a group of senior players about that, which Sean wasn't a part of. But so I've got a group of players that are preparing, and I'm trying to get them right. And on the other hand, I've got coaches who are saying, "We haven't coached enough.
We need more time.
We're not prepared. We're up against the All Blacks." And so you're playing this balancing act between trying to satisfy the coaches, and you're saying to coaches, you know, you're saying to Andy Farrell, "In this training session, you've got 6 minutes of a defence block. That's all you got. And, you know, you're saying to someone else, well, you're playing the session, you've got 6 minutes, and they think, I'm underdone, I'm not prepared. So it's that fine line. I don't think Sean was aware of that, you know, in terms of, you know, that's part of the challenges of, you know, being the head coach on tour. So we had a good chat, and like I said, I don't have any problems with him. I just thought there was a better forum for him to address it than that.
You might be sending your Big 12 down the number 7 channel in the Six Nations for the first couple of minutes.
Yeah, I mean, the ironic thing is that kind of, if you're going to come out and be critical, then you've got to back it up with other things. So I went and had a look and went, okay, I've been with Wales for 10 years, and I'm thinking, okay, so in that 10 years, so Sean didn't play in the game against in Chicago, where Ireland beat the All Blacks. And in that 10-year period, I know he's had a few injuries. He's only ever played on one Irish team that beat Wales. So to me, you've got to have a little bit of a better record than that.
The beef is real.
Ooh. So, you know, I'm just saying, I don't think that's kind of like me just going back and going, you know, if you're going to be critical, then you've got to make sure you've got something to back it up with, don't you?
Does it add a little bit of spice for the game, or are they two very separate entities?
For the Six Nations?
For the Six Nations, yeah, for the Ireland game.
Probably. Probably, yeah. I don't know.
You've never been shot, you know, low in motivation coming back over to Ireland. You know,
yeah, no,
the way things finished, yeah, back in 2000.
That's our whole, yeah, part two of the show here. Don't be, yeah, ruining any of our, yeah, good stuff.
I think that the game will take care of itself. It's for us, we've got the three games at home. We start with Scotland in the first game, and our two away games, Ireland and England. So, yeah, it's always been, I think in the last 10 years, it's been 50-50 in terms of results and stuff. But I'll let the players take care of that. So, I think in saying that, you know, you guys know how the media works, and there is no doubt when Sean's come out and said something that the media have gone into a frenzy, and they've started ringing around everyone else to try and corroborate and get some stuff in. In fairness to everyone else, they haven't actually come out and supported them in that. And so, and you know, I had a good chat to, you know, Matt Dawson. Did an interview with him a few weeks ago, and he first thing he said to me was he just regretted and wished he'd never said anything in 2001. You had that tour that you were on in Australia, he'd come out and was critical of Graham Henry and stuff, and just regretted it. So look, you know, sometimes as young men, you say things that you probably wish you hadn't, or maybe you could have said it in a different way. And like I said, but I want to reiterate, he was absolutely fantastic on tour. He was great in his leadership and the way he conducted himself in the change rooms and motivated players, and his form was outstanding. And I thought he was definitely one of the players of the tour.
Yeah, for sure. You mentioned 2009. That's your first experience, really, of the Lions and being involved. It's kind of a gentle introduction for what ultimately begets 2013, and then this year it kind of seems like it ratchets up every time. That maybe that's because it ends up in New Zealand. It was always going to be the most tense. The intensity just seems to get more and more.
Yeah, I think it's as much about the opposition as well. I mean, to take on a tour of this magnitude with the three tests, the Maoris, five Super Rugby sides, you know, that was the real challenge. Where 2009 and 2013, you get a couple of games where you know you can have a couple of easier days, and whether you're playing New South Wales country or something like that, you're going to comfortably win the game by, you know, 20 or 30 points, having rested the players for a little bit. But this tour was relentless from, you know, an opposition point of view, and it made it tough and incredibly
What's your role in picking that? Like, in retrospect, would you pick something different?
No, that's yeah, exactly the question I was going to ask. No, so that wouldn't. Was all set up by the time you had.
Yeah,
no, come
I mean,
along.
This is
that's done years in advance, right?
About 12 months in advance. So
okay,
this is the schedule. That's it, and you've got to deal with it. So, you know, we tried not to dwell on that too much because you can't do anything about changing it. But
Beer.
From, thank you. from my point of view, you know, I think what would be acceptable would be a week of preparation in the UK or Ireland as a minimum before you went away as a squad. You've got those warm-up games. I wouldn't play a game before the first test. I think you want a midweek game before the second test so you keep everyone still hungry and still involved, and then you've got your third week preparation. That would put a Lions tour out by a couple of weeks, and the challenge that we have at the moment is getting the PRL and English clubs to agree to that sort of schedule with the players being away for longer. So what's going to happen in the future, I'm not too sure.
And what's the sense of that? The PRL are obviously pushing for a reduced Lions tour. Do you think it would have an adverse effect on being able to pull the team together? Because we saw by the time of the third test, the Lions were playing their best stuff. So more time spent in the training part, more games together, more opportunities for combinations to combine. You know, it seems counterintuitive that they're looking to reduce it when, you know, the need is almost for an extra week or two.
Absolutely, and that's the big thing. So they're talking about now reducing the number of games to 8. And you could it could possibly work with 8 games if you did have that week together and you didn't play a game before the first test. So that would mean that it would be the same length of tour that we've got at the moment. But, you know, pretty tough having, you know, just going on tour in 8 games and having the warm-up, and you want to give everyone an opportunity on the Lions tour and to start and to play and feel like they're a part of it. You know, I don't think you want to be in a situation where you're picking a team and basically you say, well, here's my test side, here's the others, and you just concentrate on your test team sort of leading into...
Well, that's what happened in 05 with Clive Woodward.
Yeah.
And just drawing the comparisons between the two, were you conscious of obviously not going that route when you picked the numbers? So it was 41 initially?
41, yeah.
Yeah, versus 47, I think it was, Clive Woodward. Were you conscious to make sure it was significantly lower to make sure immediate comparisons weren't drawn, the two, knowing it was going to be a very attritional tour?
I mean, I think ideally the numbers that you want are sort of 37, 38. And then when we looked at it and just went, man, it's a tough tour. So we did pick a couple of extra players, given if we did pick up injuries, you know, we had players already there, and rather than having to fly them in from, you know, a reasonable distance and stuff. So, and we just felt what we needed to do, give ourselves the best opportunity, was to protect as many of the starting 15 or the 23 before the first test. If you're going to win a Lions tour away, I think the best chance you've got of winning a Lions tour is if you win the first test. Yeah, unfortunately, we lost the first test, so those plans went completely out the window.
This is actually kind of the subtext of the Geography 6, as they came to be known.
Yeah.
That's kind of, it's protecting that team over the course of the duration of the test series. You took a lot of shit for this.
Oh, yeah. Did I? I mean, if I was to do it again, I'd do it differently. You know, when we picked the squad, and as Brian alluded to, we were expecting, as in past tours, sort of 10, 12 injuries. And so you're thinking, you know, you're going to pick up injuries. We know we're going to have to call players in. And we didn't have to call anyone in, basically, because we were very, very incredibly fortunate on the injury front. So as a result, we ended up bringing those players in as cover on a proximity, because they were either in New Zealand or they were in Australia, and they were there to sit on the bench to cover and to protect the test side as much as possible. If I was to do it again, I would do it differently. And what I would do in the future would be, you pick the squad of 41, and then you'd pick 6-7 guys and say, the 6 or 7 guys, if they haven't already been called in to the squad, would then come in for that week or 10 days, whatever, for that period to cover. So, I mean, hindsight's a great thing, and you learn things. And for me, you know, I've made a lot of mistakes, and that you know, when I reflect back on that, that was a mistake. And if I was to do it again, that would definitely be something I would do differently.
So the scrutiny of the Geography 6 coming in, did that make you change your mind as to how you wanted to manage them, how you wanted to manage the original squad? Because you look at certain games, I think the Chiefs game, where all 3 front rowers played 80 minutes, which is unheard of really in professional rugby these days. So in a way, they didn't fully get their opportunity to pitch themselves for the test spot because maybe they were expected to do more than ordinarily would be asked of them. Did you feel the pressure of the media and what was being said by past players and so on made you change the way you thought about giving free, easy Lions caps to these players?
A little bit. You know, there's we said along to the squad that these players were just coming in to cover. You know, they were there if there was an injury during the game, and we saw a couple of them come on. One was for a sin binning and another one was for an HIA. So they were there to cover. And maybe in the second game, we if it, in hindsight, would have put a couple of them on, but it was sort of 10 minutes to go, and so we left the starting 15 on. So I'd like to think from that perspective, you know, we didn't give away easy caps, we didn't give away Lions jerseys, and out of that six, probably three or four were next on the in line anyway. You know, so
yeah. So why didn't you go with the next six, irrespective of where they had toured? Because I think you would have gotten an awful lot less abuse or stick from the media or from past Lions or past coaches if you had just gone to the next six in line, because more numbers, fair enough, no one will have an argument with that, but when you start going to players that people don't know particularly well just because they're in close proximity, that takes away from the jersey a little bit.
Absolutely, and that's why I said that I would do it differently, and that's why you know, if we were bringing players in, I mean, Ireland were in Japan, the difficult one was bringing in the English players who were in Argentina. They weren't even in Buenos Aires. They were 3 hours out of Buenos Aires. So to get to Buenos Aires, you couldn't actually just bring them in 2 or 3 days before a game, because we did that in 2013. I think we bought Christian Wade in from Argentina, and he played in the Brumbies game, and he was absolutely terrible. And not because he's not a good player, he hadn't recovered from the jet lag. So we would have had to bring those players in sort of a week earlier, and you know, how did the dynamics of that change of bringing players in from a different time, having to come in a week earlier? Players that you would have brought in, obviously Dylan Hartley would have been one of them. Maybe Kian Healy might have been another one. Second row from England.
Launchbury. Yeah. The running joke in Ireland in advance of the tour, because Tom Court got a game in 2013, was no matter what, go on your holidays to New Zealand. don't worry about sunshine, just get to New Zealand, be in the mix, be in close proximity, because there's a game there for you. Have boots, we'll play.
And you'll find that's happened on lots of different Lions tours, that the Lions have picked up injuries and someone's been close and they've been called, and happened on 2001.
Andy Nicol. Yeah.
Was there on a tour, they needed a scrum half, they brought him in. So, you know, I'm not the first person to do it, I just did it on a bigger scale.
Yeah. You dared to dream, that was your problem. But it does, it brings us nicely to the whole sense of scrutiny that you were under, particularly from the New Zealand media. And I think we all kind of at this distance forget a little bit about how intense it was for you guys in particular. And I think specifically for you as a Kiwi in New Zealand, the stuff that the New Zealand Herald pulled was unbelievable.
Yeah, it was. And that really took me by surprise, because I had this romantic dream, having grown up in New Zealand and the Lions tours having come on a reasonably regular basis. I had this kind of thing there that I hadn't been there for 12 years. Everyone's going to get so excited about the Lions coming, let the rugby do the talking, great series, fantastic, and the crowd will get all excited, which they did. The crowd were amazing, and the fans and the hospitality we had was incredible. But, I mean, it started, the stuff with the New Zealand Herald basically started on day one. And I'd spoken to my son, who'd played against us in the first game, and I was asked in an interview on the Friday, have you spoken to Bryn about the game? I said, oh, yeah, we had a quick chat. We didn't really speak much about the game. I made some comments in the press conference where I said to him, look, mate, you might have to make a few tackles tomorrow. And the headline the next day in the New Zealand Herald was, Gatland to target Barbarian's weakness, - his son. I was absolutely furious. I thought it was absolutely disgraceful. A headline from that, from the press conference where I said, oh, mate, you might have to make a few tackles, kind of And that started it from day one. And I think the opening paragraph was something like, Warren Gatland has instructed Ben Teo to run on an angle to his son to test his defence. And that was going to be the tactics that the Lions were going to employ for the whole of the tour. So it kind of put me on guard right from the start.
It doesn't get any better, though.
For the record, that's probably the tactics of every team in world rugby anyway.
Yeah.
So nothing really changes whether your son's playing 10 or not. More often than not, the 10 is one of the weaker defenders in most sides. So you put your big 12 charging down that channel. So even...
We've run a lot of Johnny Sexton in the past.
And who's a pretty good defender,
by
10 standards.
Absolutely.
Even if you had said something, it wouldn't have broken from what most game plans are.
No, and that's kind of, you look at, you tend to have pretty good midfield defenders. One place where you can get a little bit of a gain line is maybe in that 10-12 channel, in between that channel, and it's no different, and everyone looks to exploit that.
You have a pretty interesting theory about the New Zealand Herald as well, that they always seem to know exactly what the New Zealand team was going to be a day out from it being announced. Almost as if they were very well connected to the squad somehow, and they continued this war on you pretty much from that point the whole way through. It's like you're out of your depth, there's a row in the camp, they put you as a clown on their front cover. It was like non-stop this drumbeat, and you're stuck in the middle of it.
It was relentless, yeah, it was. It was, but I kind of... I made sure from the experience that you don't let the players see any of that. And for me, as a Kiwi, it kind of makes you more resilient, more determined. It drives you harder to want to be successful because you just want to, it's a bit like the Irish sometimes, you back us into a corner and you just come out fighting. And that's definitely the attitude that I took in terms of that tour anyway.
Did you read it every day?
No, I didn't. No, I try not to stay away from reading the newspaper. But
is that the old coaches? Oh, no, I didn't see anything in the post-match interview, whereas...
Well, I think what happened...
Not coaches know everything that goes on.
They do know what's happened because all of us nowadays, you might not read it, but when you go to a press conference, you're getting briefed by your media guys and they're saying, this is what was in the paper, this is what was said, this is what people said. So you know what's going on, but we've taken a different tact at the moment where we're starting to brief our media guy and say, don't give us any negativity. So when you're briefing us now...
After the Lions tour, you realise that... Like,
yeah, just say, I don't want to hear any negativity, don't want to comment on it, so... When you get asked in a press conference going forward saying, what do you think about what such and such said? You just go, look, I haven't seen it, I can't comment on it.
And this time it's true.
Absolutely, yeah. Because, you definitely, you do hear, because it's pretty hard with social media and everything not to hear what people are saying and things. And, that's the great thing about sport. It's about people's opinions and people disagree with you and have different opinions, and that's what makes it special.
I think the great thing about sport is that we all love it, and it's supposed to bring us together, and it's supposed to be enjoyable and unifying. But like, there's a scene in the book where you're in the middle of the Lions tour sitting having brunch with your wife, and she goes, oh, life's pretty good, there's loads of family around, you're seeing them, you're in New Zealand, and she goes, oh, are you enjoying it? And you're like, no, I fucking hate it. And she's like, what?
Absolutely, yeah.
Like, this is supposed to be your dream job.
Yeah, no, it was. And yeah, I was, I wasn't enjoying it from that aspect. Like I said, whether it was naivety or whatever, went there thinking, this is just, a dream come true, leading the Lions in New Zealand. Like I said, you look back on fabulous tours in the past and the history, and everyone just gets so excited. But things have changed, and they had a personal, only that small section of the media, basically the TV stuff and other outlets were brilliant, but and I found that challenging, and we had so many. I think my wife, I got the ticket bill a few months ago. It was $41,000 she spent on tickets for family and friends and stuff, so we had every man and his dog there, so we She was so excited about the tour and everything.
So that's why you did the book.
Yeah,
that's why I was pissed off. I got the bill for the tickets. Yeah, so.
That's only one leg of the book tour, as Graham.
I'm glad you brought up the press conferences and getting bored, because my favourite quote from the entire Lions tour was, "Fuck, I don't know why I have to fucking keep defending myself," said by Mr. Warren Gatland at the end of a press conference when he thought the dictaphones were off.
That's true. I did that on purpose, though.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I did, yeah. I did.
All right.
But I hadn't... It's kind of an unwritten rule with the journalists. You know, once the press conference is finished, even if they pick up something, they don't report on that. And I think the Sun led with that story the next day, and then everyone else said, "Well, it's an opportunity for them to follow suit." And but I did say that on purpose. So.
Why?
Because, like I said before, it was at that stage. I think it was after the second game, we were playing the Crusaders. And there was a lot of pressure on the team, and we needed to desperately win that game. And so I didn't want the focus to be on the players and the team. I think, you know, we spoke about Johnny Sexton. I was so delighted that Johnny, by the end of the tour, he got his mojo back again. He was playing brilliantly, but he arrived on tour and didn't play well in the first game. And, you know, he looked like he had the weight of the world on his shoulders, and his confidence didn't seem to be there. He was lucky enough he came on that game and got it back, and I think the combination with Farrell and Sexton, you know, was excellent that night, and it's kind of what gave us the thought about, you know, using those two in a 10 or 12. So we desperately needed to win that game in the third game. It wasn't about the performance, it was about the result. And so, you know, I was quite happy to take that pressure on myself for a couple of days rather than the pressure being put on the players as individuals and the team.
On the Johnny Sexton and Owen Farrell point, in advance of the tour, was that not a viable option for you when it came to the test match? Had you not been thinking this is possibly our go-to combination?
As a possibility, yeah. It was definitely something we're thinking about. But like I said, Johnny didn't arrive into the tour, and you know, he probably admit himself that he didn't play brilliantly for Leinster in that semi-final. Then things didn't work out from great in that second game, and even the way that he was speaking, he was kind of saying, you know, Owen was where I was 4 years ago. He's just won a European Cup. He's playing with a lot of confidence and sort of self-belief, and that's where I was going to Australia in 2013 with Leinster and being on top of the world. And I'm thinking, going, geez, he's kind of sort of...
He was talking himself down.
He was talking himself down, and you could see the way he was carrying himself around the hotel. You know, just sort of, you know, just the way that he was walking and the way he was training, he wasn't kind of as vocal and bitching and moaning as he normally does. So, no, in a positive way. So, and that's what great teams do, man. They do bitch and moan and stuff, and they get the best out of people. And so, when we ended up winning that game and that combination, I was just pleased for him because it just seemed to, he just turned the corner and just seemed to then all of a sudden get better and better, and you just saw that confidence start to come back in his game, and I was absolutely delighted for him.
That, like, taking the risk of bringing that pressure on yourself, just to put that in context, it comes at the end of a bunch of questions about the inverted commas Warren ball. So it looks like you've responded to stuff from the media. Like, it's a high wire act if you get that wrong, because it gives fuel to that guy from the Herald to go, "Oh, look at Gatland, we can stoke the bear anytime we want." It's a big risk.
Yeah, it is a big risk, yeah. And I still don't know what Warren ball is. You know, we've...
Does it piss you off?
It does, because...
So part of you was pissed off and part of you was like, this is a chance for me to do it.
When you ask someone what's Warren ball, they can't actually explain what it is. It's just some made-up phrase. I mean, we had a group of players at the time who ended up coming through Wales, or you end up being Jamie Roberts, who's not the greatest passer of the ball in terms of a technical, but get across the game line, he can get you across the game line and give you some front foot ball, and then you end up with George North, who can do the same, and then Alex Cuthbert when he was playing well, and Jonathan Davies, you know, the guys who can get you on
big lads.
Big lads, you know, and that just happens to be at the time, so you devise a game around the players that you have at your disposal. At the moment, we're picking a team that doesn't represent that because we haven't got certain players at our disposal. So you've got to play a way that reflects that.
So what's the motivation for the people who come up with that stuff?
I don't know. You know, I think it's, when you ask people what it is, you know, I mean, they just say, oh, it's big ball carriers getting across the game line. I went, well, is that not what the All Blacks use with Sonny Bill Williams? You know, and if you've got, you know, when England have got Ben Teo, and you use Ben Teo to get yourself across the game line. Robbie Henshaw does it brilliantly and carries the ball well. He's got a bit more things to his game for Ireland, but he does get you some front football.
I suspect the motivation in a lot of cases is snobbishness, that people are like, he fecked off at 30, went to Galway, and who the hell does he think he is? He's got his own style of rugby. That's what I think the motivation is.
I don't know. How many trophies have we won?
10.5.
10.5, yeah. I can't complain of that, so...
But I think that maybe in time, when you retire or move on, everybody will be like, Jesus, that was really good, wasn't it? And I don't know. I think maybe in time it becomes a phrase that you reclaim and go, yeah, that was mine. I did that.
Yeah, I was watching one of those NFL programs the other day and they were talking about Schneider Ball or something like that, so I think I probably should be...
That can be the title of your full career book.
Yeah, Warren Ball, yeah.
So there you are. That's just a flavour of the Warren Gatland Roadshow special that we did last night. You can watch and listen to more highlights on offtheball.com, on Facebook and on YouTube. Earlier on, we did ask you to identify our mystery voice who's just a bit worried about piling on the pounds over Christmas.
I will get fat.
The answer, of course, is Padraig Harrington. Congratulations to Ross Murphy, who's won unlimited golf for a year at Palmerston House Estate. That is a magic prize. We're going to give you another chance to win on tomorrow's show. For more details on their 2018 memberships, get on to palmerstonhouse.ie. Coming up this weekend, an absolutely sensational Saturday and Sunday table for you. Our Saturday panel is going to be discussing the life of an intercounty GAA star, Monaghan's Conor McManus, Kildare's Eamon Callaghan, Meath's Mickey Burke and Wexford's Kieran Ling in studio. Also going to have team news, goals and updates from around the Premier League for all the 3 o'clock kickoffs with Kieran Cunningham and Gary Breen. Live commentary of Munster against Leicester on Off the Ball with Dave McIntyre, Liam Toland and Keith Wood on a very special extended Off the Ball from 7 p.m. on Saturday evening. On Sunday, we've got the newspapers, but then live commentary of the Merseyside Derby with Nathan Murphy and Pat Nevin at Anfield, followed by the Manchester Derby, Dave McIntyre and Kevin Kilbane at Old Trafford. But for now, that is our lot for tonight. If you missed any of it, we've got all those podcasts available for you. From last night's Heineken Roadshow at the Stella Theatre in Rathmines in Dublin. Some sensational stuff from Warren Gatland and real honesty on his part and on Keith Wood and Brian O'Driscoll's part too, to kind of fill in the blanks from some pretty momentous moments in Irish rugby history and obviously from Warren Gatland's own career too. So really interesting stuff. Hope you enjoyed it and you can get it all for download on podcast. Blanc is up next. Good night.
Off the Ball on News Talk. Thanks to Air. Catch all the sports you love free on the Air Sport Pack with Air Broadband.